Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Education Essential to Upward Mobility. One out of four adults in Midland County have literacy skills at third grade level or below. John Trischitti III, Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin. Today, the majority of the counties in the Permian Basin rank among the lowest literate and least educated in the United States. According to the National Center for Educational Statistics, both Texas and New Mexico rank in the bottom 25th percentile in literacy nationally, with several Permian Basin counties ranking near the bottom of state averages. Through the generous support of the Abel Hanger Foundation, FMH Foundation, Permian Strategic Partnership, and the Brown Family Foundation, the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, LCPB, was founded in 2021 to address the literacy challenges prevalent in the Permian Basin, which includes 19 counties in Texas and 3 in New Mexico, with the mission to increase the literacy levels and skills of all people in the Permian Basin, improving their quality of life. One challenge is that literacy is historically underfunded and under-researched in our part of the world, with no real data being available for adult and family literacy. To that end, the Literacy Coalition commissioned the American Institute of Research, AIR, to do a literacy needs assessment specifically for the Permian Basin region. The full LCPB Adult Literacy Needs Assessment, Barbara Bush Foundation for Family Literacy National Action Plan, and Economic Impact Report are all available on the LCPB website for your review at literacypb.org. Perhaps the most important takeaway from this needs assessment is that adult learners, service providers, educators, foundations, and public officials all share a vision of individuals and families having the knowledge, skills, and resources that they need to thrive now and in the future. By working together and building on one another's strengths, the members of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin are well positioned to help make this shared vision a reality. The Texas state average for the lowest literacy proficiency levels, approximately second, third grade, among the adult population ages 16 through 74 is 28%. Midland County's low literacy percentage comes at 26%. What this means on a practical level is, while slightly better than the state average, one out of four adults in Midland County have literacy skills at a third grade level or below. Also specific to Midland County, an estimated 28,700 adults have low literacy skills, again, reading at or below a third grade level. Yet it is estimated that only 1,200 individuals are currently participating in some form of adult education programming. Improving literacy rates would have a transformative economic impact on the Permian Basin and its residents. If the Permian Basin were able to match the current average literacy rates in Texas and New Mexico by 2040, the annual earnings gain would be approximately $353 million, with more than $242 million in new gross product each year and over 6,725 new jobs. A well-rounded education is the key to upward mobility. A study by the Pew Charitable Trust shows that for people starting at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, a college degree can quadruple their chances of making it to the top. There is a correlation between illiteracy and income, at least in individual economic terms, in that literacy and education has payoffs and is a worthwhile investment. As the literacy and education rate doubles, so doubles the per capita income. All of these factors do not even begin to scratch the surface of the social and cultural dynamics that have an impact on an individual reaching adulthood without adequate education or literacy skills. Many of the students that are underperforming in the school setting have outside factors at work that can make the learning experience all the more difficult. A one-parent household, little to no parental involvement, access to basic food and nutrition, inadequate books in the home, and lack of access to reliable internet to do schoolwork are only a fraction of the influences that can negatively impact learning and contribute to a child becoming a low literacy adult. We must begin to change the narrative when it comes to literacy and identify that it is not just an education issue, but a social issue as well. Literacy clearly matters to the region, its institutions, its people, and its future. The data in these assessments spans generations, and so too will the efforts to improve adult literacy rates in the Permian Basin. Our overwhelming impression from our conversations across the region is that leaders and the funding community have the will to embark on such an epic journey. The hope is that LCPB and this assessment will spark dialogue between stakeholders in your community and guide your first steps to join the coalition and help us tackle the pressing problem of literacy in our region. No stopping student athletes from getting paid for likeness. Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. Sometimes you can't make everyone happy. There are people who have been calling for student athletes to be paid for years. That finally happens, and now people are upset about name, image, and likeness. People have been saying that athletes should be able to move from school to school like coaches. They finally get the ability to do so, and now they can't stop complaining about the transfer portal. Me? I had no problem with the previous status quo, and I am fine with the new normal. But I can't stand the complaining now. Coaches are complaining. Actually, that can be entertaining. You tell them, Jimbo. Fans are complaining. Analysts are complaining. Here's the deal. NIL, the ability of a student athlete to be paid for his or her marketability, will take some time to get used to. But you can't standardize it. Students have the right to be compensated as much as their likeness will allow, and their ability to earn money will differ based on school size, alumni support, college community, etc. Texas schools will have an advantage here, a big advantage. Those supporting Texas A&M and the University of Texas in particular will operate in this new NIL world and be able to throw obscene resources at students that few schools will be able to match. It is not their fault the rules have changed. It is not their fault that so many called for players to be able to cash in on their celebrity. The fact is, major college athletics has been an arms race for decades. Lately, that race revolved around facilities and the paying of coaches. Decades ago, collecting as many players as possible was the goal. Then, under-the-table contributions were a greater part of the game, and SMU showed everyone how to do it. Unfortunately, Mustang boosters were a little too brazen about their activities. Still, I'd like to think they were ahead of their time. Their blueprint, which included actual contracts, was similar to how successful collectives will operate in today's cash grab. The payment of athletes is tricky because we are basically talking about such a small percentage of athletes being impacted. We are talking about mostly football and basketball players. Universities can't pay those athletes directly, like employees, because Title IX issues would require that if a university pay some athletes, that it would inevitably have to pay them all, from football to gymnastics. Smaller schools, including those at the NCAA Division II level and below, can't operate in such a system with their limited budgets. And now, any restrictions on NIL would end up in court so fast, because the student's marketability is being denied, that enforcement becomes difficult, to say the least. Alabama coach Nick Saban might not like it, but there doesn't appear much that he or anyone else can do to change it. As for the transfer portal and the free agency that it sets up, make it more structured. But in the end, that isn't going to change much. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld was right that fans of sports teams, professional or college, root for laundry. We root for the brand. We cheer for the jersey. You might not like that the person wearing is getting paid, maybe even handsomely, for wearing that jersey, but there were probably some who never got over the breakup of the Southwest Conference. I say college sports will continue to evolve, and that will continue to frustrate some, probably because their favorite school wasn't able to adapt or was left out. Either way, I am happy for those students-athletes that are making money. They deserve it, and it certainly isn't their fault someone else will cut them a check. Don't like it? Stop watching college sports. Fat chance too many people will be doing that. Midland, not Moscow. Texas's energy sector offers world an antidote to Putin's aggression. By Deborah Gordon and Jeremy Mazur. Commentary. Just as the Texas Revolution gave rise to the battle cry, remember the Alamo. Today's energy crisis gives rise to another. Midland, not Moscow. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the subsequent international realignment of energy exports transformed a regional war into a global energy emergency. The world's safety and security are at stake. Texas is the new frontier for cleaner fossil fuel production and an expanded portfolio that includes breakthrough technologies such as carbon capture, hydrogen, and geothermal energy. Propelled by a substantial increase in production over the past decade in the Permian Basin and Eagle Ford Shale, the U.S. recently surpassed Russia and Saudi Arabia as the world's largest oil producer. In 2020, the U.S. supplied nearly 1 in 5 barrels consumed worldwide, 50% more than Russia. This success story is not enough, however. Global markets need more energy, and consumers of every stripe want cleaner, affordable energy. Texas can help meet this growing demand, in part by leveraging newly available federal funds and innovations, especially since Russians are unlikely to play fair or clean. Texas should first use its existing oil and gas resources advantageously, producing oil with the lowest possible emissions and further differentiating our production from Russia's. By increasing efficiency and the use of renewable energy in the production process and leading the development of carbon capture technology and preventing methane leakage system-wide, Texas can reduce industry emissions by 40%. To achieve this goal, however, both industry and state regulators must identify ways to certify cleaner hydrocarbon production. Norway, Saudi Arabia, Oman, and others are already pursuing these 21st century strategies. By taking the lead on them, Texas can supply the world with its energy needs and blaze a trail that reduces greenhouse gas emissions while building clean energy infrastructure. Second, Texas must counter Moscow's energy aspirations by adding zero-emissions technologies to the state's energy portfolio. A recent report from Texas 2036 and the Center for Public Finance at Rice University's Baker Institute of Public Policy shows that hydrogen, carbon capture technology, and geothermal energy can satisfy the growing global demand for cleaner energy. Moreover, recent congressional legislation makes billions available for these emerging technologies. By taking a lead in these emerging industries that are part of an energy expansion, Texas and the U.S. will gain a significant competitive advantage over Russia and others in global energy markets, improving global sustainability in the process. Russia produces some of the world's dirtiest oil and gas. A recent analysis by RMI indicates that Russian gas creates at least twice as many emissions as Texas gas. and a scientific study using satellites detected Russia's leaky oil and gas systems, which can be seen from space and are estimated to emit 1 million tons of methane per year, 3 times more than the U.S. In fact, each ultra-emitter, over 25 tons of methane per hour, spotted spews as much carbon dioxide equivalent emissions in a year as 4 million cars, melting the permafrost along the pipelines. The world will face a significant impediment to achieving sustainable goals if Russia is allowed to move forward with its plans to meet the projected doubling of global energy demand by 2050 through its energy strategy for 2035. Their first major foray is a $140 billion Siberian mega project called Vostok, designed to export millions of tons of oil through the Arctic, skirting the North Pole. Russia's Faustian bargain is that climate change will melt sea ice and open the northern passage to their unrestricted energy exports. If the war in Ukraine has taught us anything, it's that Russia's energy hedge money will not bring peace. If Russia reclaims the energy mantle, price manipulation and supply embargoes may well follow. Russia has used these weapons against the EU and its former Soviet neighbors time and again. Given Russia's designs and methods, America's strategic energy race is the race of a lifetime, and Texas is uniquely positioned to lead the nation's counter to Russia's plans. Precisely how we do this is key. It is not enough to boycott Russian oil and gas imports and investments while the war rages. There is too much at stake to allow Russia to expand its energy dominance. Instead, the U.S. can double down on cleaner energy now. There's no place better than Texas to make the first move. Deborah Gordon is a senior principal at RMI and senior fellow at the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs. Jeremy Mazur is a senior policy advisor at Texas 2036. This op-ed first ran in the Houston Chronicle. No need to fear your property appraisal. Dale Kramer, Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. The Texas real estate market is red hot, and your recent property appraisal likely reflects that. The average selling price of a home in Texas in 2021 was up 18%, and substantially higher in some areas. Property taxes in Texas are high enough, and the prospect of an 18% or more jump in that tax bill is terrifying. Never fear, that's not going to happen. Tax rates across the state are now dropping, and tax bills, though still rising, are increasing at their slowest rate in years, well below the rate of growth in Texans' personal income and today's rate of inflation. Our recent research at the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association found total savings in 2021 alone topped $6 billion, or 8% off the average tax bill. How? First, all property owners are benefiting from 2019 legislation limiting property tax growth. Now, as property appraisals rise, most taxing units must cut their tax rates as they are limited to generating an overall revenue increase of no more than 2.5%. Schools, or 3.5%, counties and most large cities and special districts without voter approval. Essentially, if everyone's tax appraisals in a school district increases by 10%, the district must adopt a tax rate 7.5% lower than last year. Also, all homeowners are protected by a 10% appraisal cap. Any appraisal increase above 10% is exempt from taxation, a provision designed just for a situation like today's real estate market. Some homeowners have additional protections. School taxes are frozen for homeowners aged 65 or older or disabled. Finally, Texans on May 7 overwhelmingly voted to further limit their property taxes by passing 2 new constitutional amendments. The first, on the ballot as Proposition 1, will cut taxes for the elderly and disabled by reducing their frozen amount as school tax rates decline. Proposition 2 will raise the exemption for all homeowners from the current $25,000 to $40,000, saving the average homeowner about $186 annually. Still, what about those breathtaking appraisals? Property owners in Texas have two protections. One, property must be appraised at its market value before exemptions are applied. And two, an appraisal must be comparable to that of similar properties. If you think your appraisal is higher than your home's market value, compare it to your January 1 values on popular real estate websites, Realtor.com, Zillow, or Redfin, for example. If your appraisal is substantially higher, challenge it with the appraisal district. If your appraisal seems right, but you know similar properties in your neighborhood are appraised lower, you may be able to reduce your value by showing that to the appraisal district. After all this, if you now think your appraisal is fair, congratulations! Your tax bill is now zero. That's because your appraisal doesn't set your tax bill, it simply determines your share of the overall property taxes a jurisdiction wants to raise. Your tax bill will be set this summer when local governments adopt their tax rates. Hearings where rates get adopted are poorly attended with little public input, but that shouldn't stop you from having your say. If you want your voice to be heard, go to texas.gov/property taxes this summer. There you can look up what rates your local jurisdictions propose to adopt and see how much that will cost you. If you can't attend the public hearings where rates are set, the website will let you submit comments to the rate-setting body before it adopts its tax rate. If you've done all that and still aren't happy with your tax bill, don't despair. Texas has a huge surplus that legislators in 2023 can use to curb property taxes even further, assuming they hear from you. Dale Kramer is president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, www.ttara.org, a nonprofit, membership-supported organization of businesses and individuals interested in the state and local fiscal policies in Texas and the way those policies impact the economy.
This article is entitled MPD, Midlander Dies After Rollover on West Industrial, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 38-year-old Midlander died early Saturday after a one-vehicle crash on Industrial Avenue. The Midland Police Department reported that Adam Alvarez was driving his 2008 Ford Mustang westbound at a high rate of speed. In the 1700 block of West Industrial, Alvarez lost control of the vehicle and collided with a gas meter and a fire hydrant. The vehicle then rolled and eventually collided with a building, according to MPD. Officers responded to the crash around 5:04 a.m. Alvarez was not wearing a seatbelt, was the vehicle's only occupant, and was pronounced deceased at the scene from his injuries, MPD reported. The investigation is ongoing. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Inflation Puts Pressure on Local Officials to Be Better, by Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. Did you see the Bloomberg story in the weekend edition of the Reporter-Telegram? Midland is home to the highest inflation in America. Yes, sometimes it hurts to live in God's country. This story talks about the real issues that come with being in Midland right now. Times are certainly good in the oil field, and there is nothing wrong with that. The Reporter-Telegram supports the oil industry, always has, always will. Still, the Bloomberg story laid out a case that many Midlanders need help. Midland, Texas, has had the longest bout of high inflation in the U.S. over the past year. Yes, that includes Dallas and even New York City. Bloomberg reports 9% to 11% inflation going back to November. The national average during that time is around 6 to 8%. Here's an excerpt from that story. Menus at local restaurants have sticky notes telling diners that prices have been raised. A gallon of milk has surged to about $6 at local gas stations, often the closest option for basics. And each Wednesday, a growing line of hundreds of cars forms outside the area's largest food bank. Inflation in Midland has hovered near 10% for the past 6 months, more than any of the about 400 metropolitan areas tracked by Moody's Analytics, and well above the national average. Over the period, the West Texas oil industry hub has had it even worse than big city hotspots such as Atlanta and Phoenix. Why do I write this? Because awareness matters. Rents are increasing. The price of homes is turning Midland into the Highland Park of larger West Texas cities. We have heard over and over about the Midland markup when it comes to building projects. And we don't have enough people to keep construction projects going or keep restaurants fully staffed. And most people and businesses don't benefit from being government, where a cost of living adjustment is a vote of a government board away. This isn't the first time I have written this, but there probably hasn't been a more important time to be on one of the government boards, city council, commissioner's court, school board, hospital board, or college board. At this very time, you have a duty to keep services to what Midlanders expect and do so responsibly. We need more people to live in Midland. Our quality of life or quality of place is impacted dramatically by the fact our schools, hospitals, construction firms, restaurants, and stores don't have a dependable workforce. We also need businesses that don't measure up to the energy industry in terms of the bottom line, to feel there is a place for them in our community, and that they aren't feeling the impact of inflation worse than those in Manhattan, San Francisco, or Austin. Because right now they are. The Midland markup is hitting each one hard. This is an unbelievable time in Midland, with government entities lining up tax elections, public-private parks projects in the $55 million range, and social media conversations asking to bring more to Midland for our quality of place. After all, it's what Midlanders want. It takes me back to last year's City Council budget passage. Mayor Patrick Peyton voted against it. When asked why he voted against it, he said he didn't feel like it was a good time to vote for a tax increase. That, of course, brings up the bigger question. When is the right time to raise taxes in Midland? I can't imagine now is the best time. Again, for those on government boards across the city, you ask the residents of Midland and Midland County to be an elected official. You wanted this responsibility. We have many core responsibilities that need to be addressed. Please make sure you are up to the task of deciding what's needed and what really isn't a function of government, especially in a community where inflation is beating down on the average person. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Report: Saudi Arabia Still Backing Russia in OPEC, by Andrew Davis, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia signaled it will continue to support Russia's role in the OPEC Plus group of oil producers, undermining U.S.-led efforts to isolate Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine, the Financial Times reported. Saudi Arabia was hoping, quote, to work out an agreement with OPEC Plus, which includes Russia, unquote, Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman told the FT. The world should appreciate the value of the alliance, he told the paper. OPEC Plus production quotas, which have been in place since April 2020, are set to expire in 3 months. The U.S. has been pressuring OPEC to boost output to ease surging energy prices. Prince Abdulaziz told the paper that OPEC Plus would increase production, quote, if the demand is there, unquote. But it was too soon to have an idea of what a new agreement would be like. With the havoc you see now, it's too premature to try to pinpoint an agreement, he said. But what we know is what we have succeeded to deliver is sufficient for people to say so far there is a merit. There is a value of being there, working together.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.